Councillor Liam Quaid, Green Party, you're very welcome to the show. Thanks for talking to us this afternoon. And you represented the Cork East constituency for the Green Party. We've just had it announced, obviously, the elections on the 8th of February. Mm-hmm. How's the campaigning going?
It's kicking off nicely now. I have a WhatsApp group that over 20 people have joined. So we're kind of, after getting a start on canvassing and postering, and we're getting more systematic with that over the coming weeks. I was a little bit taken by surprise by the snap election, so I'm still kind of finishing up at my HSE work, which is in the mental health services, so I wasn't able to kind of cut straight into election mode. Mm-hmm. So I had a little bit of kind of things to finish up there, and from kind of tomorrow onwards, we're going to be ashes kind of every day, very intensively.
And presumably then it'll seem like you've been doing it for a long, long time.
Yeah, and I suppose it's so recent in time since the local elections that it's almost like a kind of a natural state to be electioneering. I must admit, I needed a little bit of a nudge from my wife to kind of start into canvassing again last Sunday, but once I was out there, I'd forgotten how much I enjoyed it. It's my favourite part of the whole process, is meeting people and just kind of putting forward, you know, my kind of the areas that I'd like to focus on, and, mm-hmm. and more importantly, hearing from people what they're concerned about and what they would like representation on. So I'm very much a kind of a people person, and I'm always really kind of taken, you know, with any new conversation you have with a new person, you learn something new and you form a connection, even if you might disagree on things. So I could canvass kind of till the cows come home.
Now, based on what you've just said there as well, so as you're standing in the Cork East constituency, what is your vision as a Green Party candidate for this area?
Yeah, so I suppose I would have a very, particularly because I'm working in the mental health services, I would have a very strong focus on health and disability services, on improving access and improving the quality of services. And I think we're all agreed that our health and disability services are in a state of crisis. You know, we've seen that reach its absolute peak in the last week with the really kind of tragic scenes in A&E departments in Cork and elsewhere. And I know from my own work that, you know, we can't meet the level of needs that's out there without a major increase in ground level staff recruitment. Likewise, I've spoken to many families with children with disabilities who are just having an absolute tormenting experience, either trying to get services or trying to get enough support within services once they do access. And I think, you know, the Green Party has obviously as its primary focus environmental protection, mm-hmm. and we recognise that the natural environment is kind of the foundation for everything. You know, if we don't look after the natural world, we won't have a functioning society or a kind of flourishing economy. But in order to, I think, really kind of face all of the issues that are going on, I think we have to give as much attention to the crisis in health and housing as we do to the environment. And I think they have kind of common roots, those crises, and I think their solutions are interlinked as well.
And so some of those solutions, when found, will alleviate issues in other areas of a person's life.
Yeah, and I suppose it's about a kind of a shift in perspective from a focus on purely on kind of short-term election cycles and short-term economic growth, and looking more to the broad picture of what kind of a society do we want to live in, looking at the longer-term planning for the future. The election slogan I have is for our children's future. And it might sound a little bit grandiose in a way, but I really think we're at a crucial point in our history as a country. You know, we have a whole generation of young people that are potentially locked out of home ownership because of the affordability crisis. We have so many people that are unable to access high quality public services, and of course we're facing a climate crisis. And I was primarily motivated to get into politics following the birth of my daughter. Both myself and my wife, we had kind of an awareness of climate change prior to then, but it didn't have much emotional resonance with us until we became parents. And we began to read a lot more about it, and neither of us were politically active prior to that. But we both became members of the Green Party, I think it was 2016, 2017. And I suppose we got involved with climate action kind of advocacy group in Cork, and that was a great experience. But we realised that the scale of the challenge requires major kind of political engagement and political leadership, and increasingly I felt drawn to, you know, becoming kind of directly involved in that, and channeling a lot of kind of frustration with things not changing, a lot of frustration with social injustice, especially, you know, that I was seeing among clients as well that I work with in the mental health services, who are affected by housing and rural isolation and lots of other issues. And I wanted to do what could be as purposeful as possible. So I threw my hat into the ring for the local elections. I must say, I was, you know, I gave it as much time and energy as I had, and I didn't expect to be elected, but I was quite taken by surprise. And now I feel that there's real momentum behind the Green Party. We're still very under-resourced compared to Fianna Fáil,
some of the major parties. Yeah.
But I really feel that our time has come, and I believe I have a shot with this election, and I'm going to give it my all over the next few weeks.
Indeed. And do those policies that you just laid out there, and those visions and desires, how do they tie in with the overall policy for the Green Party?
Very much so, actually. I think sometimes maybe the Green Party can be pigeonholed as being solely kind of concerned with the natural environment,
climate, transport,
those kinds of issues. And I think what might not often be realised is that there's very much a kind of very much a holistic political programme that takes in housing, health, you know, kind of public services, education, and that there's a very common thread throughout, and that is kind of about creating communities and fairness and social justice. And we are as much a party of social justice as we are about environmental justice, but I think we tend to perhaps get invited on to, you know, national media when there's a discussion particularly about the environment or cycling infrastructure, and I think the local elections actually will have really helped to debunk that myth, because, you know, we were up until then considered a Dublin-centric, you know, urban kind of party. Whereas after those elections, you know, we had people elected such as Marco Cossig in Waterford. He was a poll topper teacher there, and we had Pippa Hackett elected in Leash Offaly, who's an organic farmer who's gone on to be a senator. So we've, and you know, people like Roisin Garvey and Clare, people who are very rooted in the country, and I'm from a rural background myself. So we're a broad church, and you know, we have people with an environmentalist background, probably a larger proportion in our party than you'd find in others, but we also have people, you know, from various other backgrounds. So,
do you find that, given, I guess, the title of the party, obviously the Green Party, and many of the policies built around the environment, etc., do you often find that some of the other, if not all of the other parties, will often steal your political clothes for themselves?
Yeah, absolutely, and I think the kind of impact that the climate strike movement in particular has had on, you know, voting preferences has meant that there's a real clamouring now among parties to kind of attach climate policies to their platform. And you might have heard of the term greenwashing, mm-hmm. which is, you know, posing as being
as an environmentalist action
while
yep.
more, really kind of just promoting business as usual. And I would actually be of the opinion that this, in a way, is more harmful than kind of outright climate denial, because it can often give an impression, you know, that we're doing things, that a government is making great strides, when in actual fact, not much is changing, and you know, we're still kind of stuck in kind of first gear, or even in reverse, when it comes to reducing carbon emissions. I think the electorate needs to be really tuned into the difference between spin and substance.
Indeed, and I guess, given our commitments under all the action plans for reducing emissions, we have to do something, because we are sorely lacking in it, and we've missed so many deadlines.
And I think when we say we have to do something, it's very much at a political level. I think one of the mistakes that has been made in the environmentalist movement in the past is to overemphasize what individuals can do. And individuals can make changes that are significant, and they can, you know, amount up to much more significant impacts when a large number of individuals make them. But really what we're talking about is large-scale change of our transport, our energy, our food production sectors, broadly speaking.
But those are things that really, really require a lot of money as well, and finance. How does that come about?
It would involve money.
And infrastructure.
But absolutely. But it would also, I suppose, the other side of it is, can we afford not to do it? And, you know, the science has shown us that we can't. Now, in terms of money, for instance, with infrastructure, if we were to radically develop public transport as we should, if we were to, you know, greatly increase the train network, link it up to light rail, say in Cork City, if we were to put in the kind of segregated cycle routes that you see in Denmark and Holland, mm-hmm. for instance, yep. that allow children to safely cycle to school, that have enormous health benefits, air quality benefits, that wouldn't necessarily, that would involve a serious amount of money, but it would mainly involve a shift in the kind of ratio of money that we spend on public transport versus roads. At the moment, the ratio is 2-1 in favour of roads over public transport, mm-hmm. and what we're advocating is that it would be reversed,
yep.
and that we would invest 10% of the transport budget on walking and 10% on cycling. And I think you would have a massive cultural shift with that, because I think oftentimes now cyclists are seen as a very distinctive kind of group of people, you know, who have this very particular interest. They're often kind of derided, I think, in media.
Very much so, yeah.
And it's yeah. seen as a particular type of subculture and a kind of a leisure pursuit, whereas we would see it as a primary mode of transport for kind of, you know, like relatively short journeys. So in Denmark and Holland, as I mentioned, it's very much
it's very much the norm
for children,
and very much the majority as well.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, children will cycle 12 or 13 kilometres to school, and that's the norm, and you've much reduced traffic congestion as a result. One of the one of the areas that I focused on in the council so far was the whole health issue of air pollution. And a lot of people don't realise that up to 1,200 people per year die in Ireland as a direct result of air pollution, and obviously car emissions are a major part of that. And there is a lecturer in UCC named John Sadeau who has been very clear that the areas outside schools are of particularly kind of hazardous to children, because there's so many cars, engines are left taking over, and children are at a height
at the right height get for the exhaust
impact. Mm-hmm. So now, when I say that about roads, I'm also very conscious that the roads in East Cork are in a shocking state, and the maintenance of those roads is paramount. One of the frustrations that I think all of us as councillors experience is the that of kind of fighting for scraps, you know, when it comes to requests for road repairs or requests for kind of
for money to fix
infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And you know, the council staff can get a lot of criticism for that, and it can be seen, you know, in a simplistic sense as the council not doing their job or they're not responding to requests. But what I've come to realise is that there's a really drastic shortage of funding from central government when it comes to any of these things, any of these basic things. And that's why, you know, you've countless kind of accounts in the media of roads that are in a terrible state or that are causing punctures and all the rest of it. So it's not about kind of neglecting roads in favour of public transport or cycling infrastructure, but it's about coming up with something that's radical enough to really deal with the kind of traffic crisis we have and the emissions that come from that, but that also kind of maintain the existing road infrastructure that we have. So it's about kind of changing priorities as opposed to necessarily massively increasing cost.
Given that we have several major issues in Ireland today, one of two of the biggest ones is obviously the housing and the homeless issue as well, which the government may or may not consider it to be a crisis. What is the Green Party take on this, and where do you see the issues and how do you see them being rectified?
Well, we would very much call for a major programme of state investment in housing, and that would involve building public housing on public land. So, you know, we would be quite in keeping with a few of the other opposition parties on that. Also, in urban centres, and particularly in cities, we would promote what's known as on the continent as a cost rental form of accommodation. So this is where the state would build housing and apartments in, you know, places like Cork City, mm-hmm. and the profit margin would be taken out of that. So the accommodation would be built, and it would be the rents that tenants would pay would meet the costs of that.
It
wouldn't make a profit as such, and that would in turn, along with state building of affordable homes and of social housing, that would bring down the overall cost of housing.
So when you say the state building houses, do you mean the state through the local councils or state through developers?
Through local councils.
Using the council's bank of land that they own?
Yes. I think there's been a real overemphasis on the private sector, particularly with the last government and the previous Fine Gael government, across the board with public services. And we have seen, you know, even as we came out of our recession and went into a recovery and apparently, you know, a booming economy, we have seen that those problems arising out of that deepen still further. So I think when it comes to essential services and when it comes particularly to large-scale construction, you know, we're going to need a huge kind of increase in that to meet the level of need that's out there. It must be primarily driven by the state.
Indeed, absolutely, and through the council, because if you look at the figures for a developer to build a house, and what they call an affordable house, it costs about 350,000. Whereas if you build it through the council, it costs 160.
And that's
a staggering difference. And do you think there's been no will or desire to do that within the previous regime?
I don't. I think ideologically they are absolutely kind of riveted to the idea of everything must be privatised. You know, I think that's part of their DNA, it appears, at this point. I think it wasn't previously the case, you know, in the era of Gareth Fitzgerald, but that tendency is very much there now, and my concern would be that if Fine Gael continue in government, that we're going to see that increasingly happening in our other services, you know, in health and disability, and I think that would be disastrous for clients, because it kind of moves what should be, you know, essential supports that are tailored to the needs of the person, to something that's more a kind of a business model that is kind of tailored to the needs of somebody who's making money out of that. And that never really works out very well for people. It doesn't work out in, you know, in terms of kind of fairness and justice. I think what we have ended up with in Ireland is, you know, this very buoyant economy, but essentially a society under Fine Gael of winners and losers.
So we're good. We're good on paper, but not when you drill down into it.
We're good at, like, I think what they've done is they've set things up in such a way that some people have acquired a lot of wealth and have done very well materially, but at the same time, essential services, including, you know, so health, disability, GP practices. Council, you know, the work of councils, outdoor staff, maintenance of infrastructure, all of those things have been really kind of cut back to the bare minimum, and not even the bare minimum. And it's had a huge impact, I think, on so many people in society, and it's created major divisions.
Indeed.
As well, and major, you know, injustices, people really kind of been left behind. Like when you consider, for instance, children with disabilities unable to access essential services, and we know that in order for a person with a disability to reach their potential, they need intervention as early as possible, and they need it on an ongoing basis, usually. So if you have a child diagnosed with autism, for instance, who should have received a certain level of support aged, you know, 3 or 4, and they're not getting it until 6 or 7, or they're getting a compromised version of that because of staffing shortages, that's going to have an impact on that child and on the child's family throughout their lives. So this is the kind of society I think we've been left with Fine Gael. They've done serious damage to our environment. They've opposed every piece of environmental legislation that was tabled by the opposition. They've even managed to obstruct environmental legislation that was successfully passed by opposition parties, such as ourselves. We had the waste reduction bill. You know, it's an issue that exercises an awful lot of people, the plastic pollution, particularly since the David Attenborough documentary. So what we were proposing was that we would ban many single-use plastics at source. So this would mean that you didn't have to be kind of agonizing in the shopping aisles over what's recyclable and what's compostable or not. And it takes that decision out of the hands of individuals, and it brings about large-scale reduction of plastics that are not necessary, you know, that have alternatives. It would also have introduced a deposit return scheme for plastic bottles, which in countries where it's used, such as Finland and Germany, they have about over 90% recycling rates for plastic bottles. Mm-hmm. So this is, you know, a really reasonable, sensible proposal. What transpired was that Fine Gael were lobbied relentlessly by plastics companies.
Yes.
And they were very receptive to that. This was discovered by Philip Boucher-Hayes in some research he did. And they gave no such time to environmental organisations who were trying to make a case to, you know, to support the waste reduction bill. And what they've done is they used a technicality in the Dáil known as a money message to block that bill from becoming law. And they did that with the Climate Emergency Bill as well, which was a bill from Solidarity. Mm-hmm. About banning oil and gas exploration. Again, it was passed by every opposition party, including Fianna Fáil. So this is the kind of...
So there's really no will within the previous government to carry out green policies, despite their openly green, talks to the public.
No, there hasn't been substance to it. You know, they were widely derided. I think it was about a year ago for a campaign that they had on social media called Green Week,
mm-hmm.
and this was, from their point of view, kind of educating the public on. Having more environmentally friendly policies, and some are more environmentally friendly practices, and some of these included, you know, unplugging a Fine Gael TD, showing the public how to unplug their phone from the wall to when it's fully charged, so that you're not wasting energy. And meanwhile, we're facing EU emission fines of around 600 million per year, mm-hmm. from 2020.
Quite.
Because our transport system is completely dependent on cars, almost completely dependent on cars. Our farming industry is based heavily on intensive agriculture, and our energy system hasn't transitioned to renewables with anywhere near the rate that it should. So it's been real kind of tokenism. And it's far too late. And our slogan for this election is: if you want green, you have to vote green. And you're certainly not going to get it from Fine Gael.
Is there a perception out there that the Green Party are all about introducing taxes, or is that a myth?
It's a myth, actually. And I think it has probably arisen from the association people might have with the carbon tax. Now, Fine Gael actually introduced a carbon tax at the last budget, which is regressive. It doesn't take into account there's no attempt to redistribute kind of wealth out of that.
It's like a blanket.
Redistribute, yeah. Payments. So what we would have proposed with a carbon tax would be one that would involve cash payments back to people who has to all citizens. Fine Gael made a vague kind of promise to put carbon tax money into schemes that would kind of be supportive of kind of clean energy, but they gave no real detail on, mm-hmm. on what that was about. And in any case, usually the people who can, you know, retrofit their homes or who can buy an electric car or whatever are higher income earners. And what we really need to do is to make this transition away from fossil fuels a fair and just transition, so that we do things like a major state program of retrofitting, mm-hmm. Social housing, for instance. I think that should be the first thing that we do, kind of a focus on social housing, and that would really help an awful lot of people who are stuck in kind of fuel poverty. It would have a great impact on air quality as well. You know, if you walk around any small town, even any village, on a winter's evening, you'll really kind of feel.
You can feel it in your chest, yeah.
The impact of yeah. You know.
And presumably, those new social housing would be governed by, modern day build standards.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Any new social housing should be of the highest kind of energy efficiency.
And given that, if you look, I mean, globally as a world figure, if you look at there's 100 companies that are responsible for 70% of the world's greenhouse gas emissions. You know, would there be plans to tax the major companies, because they seem to be getting away scot free at the moment?
Yeah, for sure. And I think it comes back to that that emphasis, you know, away from kind of individual change and onto, you know, the real kind of culprits here, which are governments and large corporations. You know, what an individual can achieve, although, you know, we should all, I suppose, be striving for that, is minimal compared to these major polluters. Now, there is a somewhat related argument that you'll hear sometimes, that you know, Ireland is a very small country, and China is emitting whatever amount of carbon, and India and America and all the rest. Therefore, you know, why should we be bothering? But what's very clear from the science, the very clear message from people like Greta Thunberg, is that all governments collectively have to make these changes. And if we don't do this, you know, our very survival is at risk. It's as stark as that. But not only that, I think what often gets lost in these discussions is that the changes that we would have to make will primarily improve our quality of life, because if we have a really high quality transport system, if we have proper cycling infrastructure, if we have our hoses retrofitted, and we have affordable access to electric cars where they're needed, there are immeasurable chain benefits in terms of our health, quality of life. You know, that so much of our time is spent stuck in traffic these days, wherever we're going, you know, whether it's through kind of Cork City or Dublin or Castlemarter. It's very clear that the way things are set up with transport just isn't working. And the situation outside schools, the kind of mayhem of all those cars kind of parked up in the morning, it's something that we actually have to change. Even separate to the climate concerns, it's not working for daily kind of functioning of our kind of society. Even, you know, if you're going into the Jack Lynch Tunnel in the morning, and the lines of traffic just seem to be increasing kind of by the month, and it just becomes unsustainable. You know, you're rushing home to a creche, or picking up your child from school, and it's no way to live.
No, indeed. I guess from a Green Party point of view, and from your own point of view as well, based in the East Cork constituency, the takeaway from this would be things like strong emphasis on housing, social and affordable housing, strong on health as well, and mental well-being as well. But also there's environmental impact there as well that the Greens will be working towards through some form of maybe ring-fenced funding. So, Liam, thanks ever so much for talking to me today. I really appreciate your time and your commentary as well.
No problem at all. It's been great to be on, and thanks for the opportunity to, you know, to have an in-depth interview.
Yeah, and I've no doubt we'll talk again, and I'll say it now, I wish you every success with it.
Lovely stuff. Thanks, Will. Take care.
Take care now.
Cheers. All the best. Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.